What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
That was Jim Nance marveling over the human highlight reel and presumptive NFL MVP Josh Allen, who will lead his Buffalo Bills against the Denver Broncos in game one of the three-game slate on Wild Card Weekend here today. All three games you can hear right here on WEEI, by the way. Coverage begins at 12:30 of Denver and Buffalo. Then you have Green Bay and Philadelphia just after 4. Washington and Tampa Bay in what should be a defense-optional game in the late slate on Sunday Night Football, to say the least. But Dan Ball and Nick Fitzy-Stevens with you. Hour number 2 just after 9 o'clock here on January the 12th, 2025. Thanks so much for being with us. Before we move forward, Fitzy, let's move backwards really quick. We talked about the fate of Mike Tomlin after the Baltimore Ravens did a number on them in the late game yesterday. The first game, the Jim Harbaugh-led Los Angeles Chargers certainly turned heads, finished with a regular season record of 11-6. But you can point to youth, you can point to Justin Herbert having a bad game. But what jumped out to you about the Chargers and the Texans? Because one team had it and the other certainly did not.
Well, one team had it at first. It looked like it was going to be the Chargers' day. But while they never really had the Texans against the ropes, they were winning the car. They were winning the fight on points early.
Right.
And then didn't find a way to take their offensive or their effort to the next level.
Yeah.
And they let the Texans hang around for a while. And the play that changed the game to me was when there was the bad shotgun snap that bounced on the ground. It magically bounced into C.J. Stroud's hands. He rolls right 15 yards by the sideline and then threw an absolute dart downfield to, I don't know if it was Nico Collins or if it was, maybe it was the receiver that wears 19. But anyway, he finds a guy 40 yards downfield, makes a 50-something yard play, and gets that crowd fired up, gets his own belief factor back up. The coach, D'Amico Ryans, love that guy. He's so emotional. He's so aggressive. Like, that's just somebody, you can see how people would want to play for him. He turned that whole thing around, and then the Texans went on the aggressive, went on the offensive, and they were the more aggressive team. Then on the next drive, so they go up 7-6, Nico Collins catches the tutty, and then on the next one, there was that 35-yard run up the middle by Stroud, which was so impressive. Love to see him using his legs like that smartly in space.
Right.
And then it's like Harbaugh and the Chargers were stunned. They were like, but wait a second. We're the better team. Everybody was picking us. We were the road favorite. How come this isn't going our way? And then Herbert, Justin Herberted again, if you will. And when I say that, it's that he has a knack for just completely turtling in the playoffs. We all remember a couple years ago, they were up 27-0 against the Jags and blew it, which is still just unfathomable to me. And then yesterday, kid had 3 picks all year. 3 interceptions all season. Threw 3 yesterday in that game. Overthrows, you know, one was tipped. Disley should have caught that ball in the flat, but
right.
The one where he just airmails McConkey, terrible.
Yeah. Awful.
He looked
missing
totally
high all game. They said, I heard it on the broadcast on this station yesterday. He's been missing high all game.
Yeah, man. It was terrible. It was really, really, really. And this is on a day where McConkey sets the rookie playoff receiving record, and oh, how that hurts with 9 catches. A 188 and a touchdown as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, how come we can't get guys like that?
Yeah.
It was a surprisingly lopsided affair. And if I told you without looking at the box score, hey, Fitz, how was the first game Saturday? Oh, it was really lopsided. Wow, the Chargers really took the Texans to the woodshed, huh? Texans haven't looked good in a while. No, just the opposite. The Texans caught fire and kicked the crap out of the Chargers in the second half.
It's funny you say that, and that was the same takeaway I had as well, specific to the Texans, where they played yesterday like I think most prognosticators before the season thought they were going to play for the majority of the season.
Exactly.
A dynamic, like a legitimate contender. And they, you know, they weren't bad. And I think it was interesting to watch the Stephon Diggs trade play out and how quickly it seemed like he fit into that offense. And they were playing really well. Then he gets hurt. It's in on top of Nico Collins getting hurt for that middle part of the season. So I know that they had some change in personnel, but They had such high expectations going into the second year under DeMeco Ryans that they weren't living up to. So it kind of seemed like, all right, sophomore slump. Maybe last year was a flash in the pan. Maybe they needed a slap in the face of reality before they take their next step in year three. And they said, oh, no, yeah, no, none of that's true. We're just as dynamic as you thought we were 4 months ago. Just ignore that whole sample size that you had during the regular season because that was all a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, my preseason Super Bowl pick, probably going back to August, was Texans-Packers.
Right. It's a good pick.
Yeah, I thought the way that the Packers played when they throttled the Cowboys and then should have beat the 49ers in the divisional round on the road.
Oh yeah.
That reeked of team on the rise that with the mistakes they made in the postseason, tidy those up, grow as an organization, you should be a force to be reckoned with the next year. Now they've been a little inconsistent. They're still good, but I think they come up short today because the Watson injury, the Alexander injury are the worst kind of injuries to have against Philly. But with the Texans, that they overcame losing Tank Dell, who is such a weapon and such a threat, which we saw at Gillette Stadium back in October.
Right.
Losing Steph Diggs, who they bring in to be Steph Diggs for what he did for Josh Allen in year two of C.J. Stroud, to come back and play that way yesterday. How about, I mean, all you needed to see was in a game where you have a team like the Chargers, who are supposed to be playing bully ball because of their coach, Jim Harbaugh, and the line that he's built and the way that he turned the team around this year, all you needed to see was that play where Joe Mixon ran outside left as there's like 5 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
Absolutely just tossing a receiver with his left, just absolutely face-planting the dude. Like, he just, I mean, that man's out of family. My God. That's all you needed to see to know who was the more aggressive team and who had the belief and who didn't yesterday.
All right, let's move to the slate that we have today, Fitzy. The first one coming up at 1 o'clock. It's Buffalo and it's Denver, and it's a team in the Buffalo Bills that I think everyone to a man expected to see take a step back this year. There were some, you know, diehards that were jumping through flaming tables and eating hotter than hot wings and everything else that thought that they'd still be a contender, but You look at just the fact of the matter of the names that they lost in the fact that you lose Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis and the lion's share of your targets as wide receivers off the offense. You lose Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde and Tre'Davious White, and there are so many players that were part of the near Super Bowl caliber Bills teams of the last half decade that left. It was very reasonable to look at that and go, well, all right, they're going to take a step back. They should fight for a wild card spot, and we'll see what they can be. Lo and behold, it was a completely rebuilt offense that seemed to be a very equitable offense in the way that they spread the ball around. And Josh Allen and Joe Brady, something about that pairing and the ability to limit Allen's turnovers and fully focus his efforts on being a plus instead of a minus, this team is a wagon right now.
They see, what's interesting about what happened with them was by trading away Steph Diggs, who was the squeakiest wheel possible, and somebody that Josh Allen couldn't help but look to so frequently, and they pivoted away from him last year, and I think that's when they became a better version of themselves in the 2023 season. And of course, you know, were it not for Tyler Bass revisiting ghosts of Buffalo field goal past in the divisional round game, maybe they would have been able to go to the championship or the Super Bowl. But this forced them to reinvent themselves. And I think Joe Brady did an awesome job with their offense this year.
Yeah.
And it allowed Josh Allen to put more on his shoulders. You would think that he already was doing enough for that team, but he was able to flex and show you just the full capacity of what he could do, which is making it such a great two-horse race between he and Lamar Jackson, either of which wins the MVP. You really won't have many arguments from people, but they are a more multifaceted, dynamic team with a passing game that can work on all levels, a great ground game, and as good as you can get at the quarterback position. They do go against a defense It's pretty stingy today.
Yeah.
In Denver, that's about as good as a run defense as you'll have. So I wouldn't be surprised if the short passing game is Buffalo's ally early on, throwing away from Patrick Surtain II, who's in the DPOY conversation, finding ways to open the field up a little bit so then you can maybe get a little run in, so maybe you can get a little play action and allow Buffalo to use the whole playbook and not just the short pass game.
Yeah, good call by you, by the way. Third best rush defense in terms of yard allowed per game, yards allowed per game, and seventh best defense overall. So it's a challenge for sure, but for sure. I just don't know on the offensive end if Bo Nix and company are going to be able to keep up. But on we move to Green Bay and Philadelphia. Both quarterbacks were dinged up coming out of the regular season, so it was kind of fascinating to watch the reporting on limited participant, full participant, whatnot. But Jalen Hurts has come through concussion protocol, and I think with Jordan Love, it was kind of ruled just being more of a stinger. And I know that his arm was sore after landing hard on it last week, but both are good to go. And I mean, you teed it up. You had Green Bay as a Super Bowl contender before the season and a team that could represent the NFC. So how do you see them matching up against Philadelphia in the fighting Saquon Barkley's today?
Yeah. I know the Eagles probably are the worst team for the Packers to play right now, because if Jalen Hurts is feeling well enough to get the ball around, now that you have Devontae Smith and AJ Brown off the injury report,
yep.
If they're both healthy, that represents a potentially dynamic passing attack. They don't have the greatest pass rush in Green Bay. Like we said earlier, they lost their number one corner. And then on offense, they do have a fleet of second and third year receivers and two good young tight ends. You're going to need Josh Jacobs to go up against one of the better defensive lines in football and be the hammer that he's been all season long.
Right.
And just get the Eagles to try to cheat a little bit more down in the box. And if you do, maybe then you can open up play action. You'll get Jordan Love to be able to hit some of those receivers. Like, you're going to need the Jaden Reeds and the Romeo Dobbses of the world to be huge for them today. And, you know, Jordan Love is super athletic. He's a great running quarterback as well. But if they stuff Josh Jacobs early and it's just an all Jordan Love game,
yeah,
he's going to try to force it into tight windows. Then you'll have multiple picks. You'll see the Cooper DeJeans of the world coming up with opportunistic INTs, and it could get ugly quickly. So I hope it's a four-quarter game as well. I hope it's an over type of game. Like you said earlier, the nightcap is D-optional.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't believe like 53.5 for Commanders at Buccaneers? That should be, like, the over-under in that should be 59, bare minimum.
And oh,
We riot if it's anything less than 60 points scored.
It's 50.5 right now on ESPN. That seems like an easy take the over. Take an alternate over if you want and make a little more cash off of that if you're looking at it. Tampa Bay finished the regular season third most in terms of yards per game on offense. Washington was 4, 5, 6, seventh on that same list. And, you know, neither have great defenses. Neither have playmakers on defense, but both quarterbacks can fall into the inaccuracy game every now and again. So, I mean, I see the ball going all over the field in this one. I'm really excited to see how these two teams match up. But, you know, this is a Washington team that's in a position that not a lot of people expected at this point in their development, given how much turnover just in the entire franchise. That's from the owner on down, through the front office, through the head coach, through the quarterback. And they've done so much to get themselves in a position that we didn't expect. But I'm not sure how much I can reasonably expect from Jaden Daniels on this stage at this point, but I can still expect them to put up a fight and it be fun, because they've won five in a row and that offense can do a lot of damage.
I expect a decent amount from him, actually. I really do. I don't think this is going to be, oh my gosh, the lights got too bright and there was too much pressure. Because look at his comeback ability. They've been on the ropes for half the season.
It's true.
And he scores game-winning touchdowns in the last minute on a regular basis with eye-popping flash and flair. And I think Patriots fans listening to us right now, if you are looking for a North Star, or if you are looking for a someone that you would want to see the Patriots evolve into next year, just think about how maybe the Patriots could be the Commanders of 2025.
Yeah.
In that you bring in a sound, well-liked, buttoned-up, defensive-minded coach, Dan Quinn, Mike Vrabel, They have Cliff Kingsbury. Maybe you bring back Josh McDaniels as well. They got Adam Peters, the assistant to John Lynch. We'll see who the Patriots get. Hopefully they bring in another football talent evaluating mind as well. Maybe you're able to elevate Drake May. You bring in a new wide receiver one, revamp the offensive line, have a good draft just like the Washington did. And next thing you know, you're ready to compete because we know there's going to be the gold standard up top, the five-time reigning AFC East champs in Buffalo.
Right.
I don't know what Miami's going to look like next year. I don't know what the Jets are going to look like next year. So you'd be screwing yourself if you didn't try to get everything buttoned up as quickly as possible and get back to competing the way the Commanders did in very pleasantly surprising fashion this year.
It's such an interesting comparison, and there's kind of an umbrella thought that came to mind. Washington was a toxic wasteland in terms of just bringing in talent, and that's at any facet. That's on the field, in the front office, in the Dan Snyder regime. It was the worst of the worst in the NFL, and in the span of 2 years, I guess a year plus two seasons worth, they have all of a sudden reinvented themselves, and all of a sudden people want to be attached to what Washington is doing. So if there are people who are on the full negative side of the spectrum in New England saying that, oh, well, they're never going to be able to entice T. Higgins, they're never going to be able to bring in high-level free agents, you're going to have to pay the suck tax for your coach and your best players, and you're going to have to sucker a team in a trade because you're never going to get a good player through free agency. If Washington can change their narrative from a horrible environment to be a part of and all of a sudden be a contender, there's no reason why with a couple of shrewd moves in terms of hires in your front office and your coaching staff, mm-hmm. that New England can't be in that same conversation. So for me, if Washington can do it on a similar timeline, you can absolutely do it. But you can't screw up these hires. That's for sure.
That's 100%. And this is not just like wearing the Patriots tinted glasses or being, as Glenn Ordway used to always say here on WEEI, the hoodie footy pajama type of Pats fan. They last year we thought like, oh, he was the best, and he was the godfather of Boston sports radio for a reason.
Grew up with him.
Mm-hmm. But there's every reason to think, like last year, 2023, John Lyons and I explored this once on a Six Rings podcast.
Yeah.
We talked at length about how last year in 2023, the Patriots were in 8 one-score games. So if Gerard Mayo and company were a buttoned up, properly prepared organization, then there's every reason to have thought, well, okay, turn half of those games around and just play smart, mistake-free football, and you could be a 7-8 win team again, and then people will be excited about the direction the organization and franchise are headed, and they won't be bemoaning Belichick's departure so much. And instead, it became a different kind of clown show altogether.
Right.
So now we have to once again look back to, okay, 7 or 8 one-score games in 2023. How many one-score games were there in 2024 with the worst roster in the NFL? Okay, now these are the things we have to look to and then put our faith in Mike Vrabel and whoever else he brings around to be part of the team, to make things Commanders. I can't believe this is so unbelievable. The people that we need to compare ourselves now to, like, let's be Commanders-esque in 2025, and hopefully by 2027, we're the new Detroit Lions. What a world!
We are officially in the upside down in New England.
100%. Play the Stranger Things music on the way to commercial. My God.
617-779-7937 if you want to get involved in the conversation. Again, all three games can be heard here on WEEI, beginning with Denver at Buffalo at 12:30, and the coverage from Westwood One will carry you through the rest of the afternoon. We have plenty more coming up, including some thoughts on the Bruins, who, after Rich Keefe may or may not have lit a fire under their you-know-what and their you-know-where, picked up a big win on the road. And the Red Sox, hearing from Tristan Casas and others, trying to wave those pom-poms and get us excited for 2025. All that and more coming up here as we lead you into 10 o'clock. Myself and Nick Fitzy-Stevens and our good friend David Azer, who's going to tell you what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI. All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Patriots have completed head coaching interviews with Pep Hamilton, Byron Leftwich, Mike Vrabel, and Ben Johnson. The latest reports are saying that Mike Vrabel and the team are engaged in contract negotiations. The Celtics are getting set to face the Pelicans at 6 p.m. tonight. They'll look to right the ship after falling to the Kings on Friday night. The Celtics are 5-5 in their last 10 games. The Bruins snapped their six-game losing streak yesterday afternoon, defeating the Florida Panthers 4-3 after David Pastrnak scored the game-winning goal with 1.2 seconds remaining in overtime. Jeremy Swayman had 40 saves in the win. The Bruins are back home on Tuesday night to play the Lightning at 7 p.m. Westwood One's coverage of NFL Wildcard Weekend rolls on today right here on WEEI. Coverage begins at 12:30 with the Denver Broncos heading up north to face the Buffalo Bills. I'm David Azer. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More with Dan and Fitzy coming up right after this.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it on WEEI.
.617-779-7937 is the phone number to get involved in the conversation. Before we move over to the Bruins and their win yesterday against the Florida Panthers, who are quickly becoming a bit of a rival for the Bruins, let's continue the conversation on the football side for just a moment. Matt is in Rhode Island. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, it was good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you?
Matt, what's up, buddy?
Pretty good. Hey, what's up? Hey, Ball, I don't know if you remember when I called you before that Bills game and I said Joe Milton's going to win the game for him. And
yeah, like, I do remember that.
Thanks for putting
that out there in the world, by the way. Appreciate that energy being out there.
Best worst win of all time.
You put it out into the universe, and the universe will reciprocate.
That's right.
Bissett would have never won that game for him. But anyway, I'm calling on the head coach. Obviously, Grable's he is a great coach. He's a great leader. But I would really rather see Ben Johnson get the job. I don't know if that's going to still be possible. But the reason being is like I think he's definitely proved his offensive capabilities. And more than that, he has an offensive template, and he knows which players are going to fit into this. So drafting wise, you narrow your misses a little bit, in my opinion. Also, I'll give Hart the credit on this because he originally said this, but
yeah,
you know, with Grable, he's going to bring an offensive coordinator, and if the guy sucks, he's not going to be good, and if he's good, he's going to be gone. So when you bring Ben Johnson, you have that guy steady for Drake May, like going forward.
All right, Matt, thank you for the call and
solid point,
Fitzy. I tell you what, on Ben Johnson, I know it's going to be Vrabel. I know they're in contract negotiations. Mm-hmm. They'll find a number, yada, yada, yada. Man, oh, man. I know that first-time head coach, at anything can go wrong. Boy, you have to just sit there and look at the potential of him with Drake May, given what he's gotten out of Jared Goff, and just go, duh, I would have loved to see that.
Oh, yeah. There's no denying that there could be an intense football sex appeal to Ben Johnson coming to town and working with Drake May. And I really like that point from Matt as well. Like if you have a scheme and a system that you bring in place, then that, like he said, that narrows the window of like trying to draft all over the place. Like, you know, you can, what kind of guys you believe will fit in and work in your system.
Right.
There is the element of the unknown with him, which is just overall leadership, organization, being in charge of a defense or finding the right people to be in charge of the defense, whereas that's a little bit less of an unknown with Mike Vrabel. And I've seen a lot of people pushing back on the Vrabel hire on social media as well, just saying anybody but Vrabel, or we can't keep doing the same thing all over again. A lot of Pats fans, it seems, and when I say a lot, I mean like more than one, but not an overwhelming majority, continue to push back and say like
a vocal minority.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, those are always the loudest, and end up somehow algorithmically noticing them first. But like,
thanks, Elon.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that. It's great. Just love it. I get it. But at the same time, like, wouldn't you, or like, don't you want to just like be, just go back to just being good again?
Theoretically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds great to me. I think that's just recent history disrupting the thought process of Patriots fans. If we were having the same conversation last year without the last year that just took place with what Jerod Mayo did, I don't think that that conversation would be happening. And these guys are not, just because they're both expatriates, it's, these are very, very different cases that you're talking about in terms of the coaching acumen, the culture building ability, and just the intensity and the professionalism, it seems like. You are getting a true pro in Vrabel. And not to, and this is gonna sound like Jerod Mayo bashing, and I'm trying not to make it sound like that, but it was there was too much that came out in the wake of him being fired, talking about him playing cards after they lost the game and just trying to be one of the guys and trying too hard to be buddy-buddy and I'm on your side and it's us against the world and I'm the good cop and all that kind of stuff. I don't think you're going to get that with Mike Vrabel. I would be hard-pressed to believe any of that's coming with him.
No, you're not going to get – you'll never catch him off guard. He's not going to be – it looks like the Pats had no game plan, or like, yeah, what is the organization doing, or we're rudderless all over again. No, you'll get all of those elements. That's the safety of the Mike Vrabel pick as well. And it's not like, I don't know, we have no reason to believe that Ben Johnson wouldn't be up to the challenge, task, or prepared. It's just that Vrabel represents, he's the devil that the organization knows. That's really what it boils down to.
On the topic of Ben Johnson, Phil is in New Hampshire with a thought on Ben Johnson. Good morning, Phil.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
What's up, buddy?
You know, I'm doing really good. You know what this town is missing? And Ben Johnson's a perfect example of it.
What?
Am I allowed to say balls?
Yeah, Trey, go ahead.
No balls anywhere. Ben Johnson's a balls hire. Yeah, but we don't know if he's a leader of men, but you're rolling the dice and you could have something amazing. All right, with the Bruins, same thing. They don't have the balls to make a trade like the Huberto trade that Florida did that changed their whole culture, which is what we need. Nobody in this town has any balls except for Wick, and Wick doesn't even own the team. It's wild. It's so annoying. So as a sports fan, Vrabel is the higher floor. Mm-hmm. The devil we know.
Yeah.
But Ben Johnson, you put Ben Johnson with the young quarterback and they grow together. Now you have possibly, yep, the thing that we had for 20 years, which was a young quarterback who was 100% bought into, a coach who had a maniacal work ethic. And it turned into 20 years of absolute freaking spoiledom that we have. It was, yep, the best thing we ever had. And we could have it again. But we don't have any balls. There's no balls anymore. They're just afraid.
How about Phil?
He's not, you know what? I absolutely love what he said, and I don't disagree with him in any way, shape, or form. There has to be, let's just bring it right out into the open.
Yeah.
The owner of the New England Patriots is 83 years old.
Yeah.
And he has now seen a couple of years where he thought the team would be competitive, would be in the postseason. He thought they wouldn't be getting flexed out of primetime spots. They wouldn't be getting Spiro Dedis and Adam Archuleta every week and just be one of those teams that CBS and Fox and whoever else would look like, ugh.
Yeah, I guess we have to put them on TV, right?
How much lipstick are we going to put on this broadcast pig all over again? Dear God. It's awful. So he's probably looking for the quickest way to make sure they get good again and that they, yeah, get back on track. And hopefully then it'll be, all right, Kraft, he gets a mulligan for his judgment on Mayo, but Vrabel is a great, very Patriot-centric guy. And then, there'll be the Hall of Fame factor in consideration for him. There's a little bit of a swing and miss potential with Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
But like we said earlier, also a higher ceiling. And that's what Phil was talking about. Swing for the fences. Ben Johnson and Drake May together may form an alliance that would put fear in the hearts of defensive coordinators, opposing teams, and fan bases for years. That's what, I bet you, that's what they would have done a long time ago. Now, the safe option.
617-779-7937 is the phone number if you want to weigh in. One more call before we take a break. Dan is in Rhode Island with a take on the Crafts. Good morning, Dan.
Yep, good segue there. Hi, Fitz, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Danny? Good morning.
You teed me up. always a pleasure to see Jalen McConkey tearing it up again yesterday.
That's
the gift that keeps on giving, dude. The gift that keeps on giving.
Forever tied together.
If Herbert, yep, didn't miss him on another one where he was streaking wide open, he would have had 250 yards yesterday.
Yeah, it's just a crappy game, but he's a hell of a player.
Yep.
I'm going to give Kraft credit for one thing, and I'm going to trash him because it's deserved. But for one thing that he did last week with his press conference that Bill Belichick could never do, he took accountability and said it was on him. I don't think he had showed some humility. I don't think I ever saw Bill Belichick take blame for anything. We got to coach better. We got to play better. Blah blah. But it was never directly on him. You know, so I give Kraft credit for that. But there was one thing that bothered me that he keeps saying that is just, I don't know what his mindset is. He can't be this dumb. He says we spend to the cap every year. I can't stand when he says that. We all know you could have 10 guys and spend to the cap with cap hits of, you know, $60 million each. It's the real money spending that they have to change. And I just don't know if they're going to do it. You know, for this team to be successful to me, and I don't think Kraft is capable of doing this, 3 years from now, if they're going to be good, they have to be in a position where they're like $20 million over the cap and have to restructure contracts. That's where it's going to have to come to, because you're going to get to a point where Drake May, if he progresses, is going to be making like $70 million a year. And I know the cap is going to go up. Christian Gonzalez is going to be, what, 30? I mean, they get stud players that are going to be paid sooner rather than later. So the whole economics of the way the Crafts have done business and done the salary cap, that's out the window. That doesn't work anymore, and it's not going to work anymore moving forward. And I just don't think, Fitz, you just said, an 83-year-old guy in the economics of today's NFL where you can pay two receivers $35 and $40 million, you know, and a quarterback $50 million, $60 million, I don't think he's capable of handling that. I think he'd have a heart attack if he had to actually do that. But that's the reality of where the NFL is going right now.
Yeah, you're right about that.
We'll see what happens. Have a good weekend, guys. Take care.
You too. Enjoy the football today, Danny. Thanks for the shout, pal.
617-779-7937. Fitzy, anything you want to throw in on his thoughts before we go to break?
No, he's I disagree with, he's one of our voices of reason from the great caller base at WEEI, and I don't disagree. It's just, again, I just want to know, like, do the fans appreciate that Vrabel will be solid and safe, or would they have the appetite and tolerance for the possibility that, I bet you, like, in year one,
yeah,
Mike Vrabel's team would probably be a little better, quicker than Ben Johnson's.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But the long-term outlook with Johnson could potentially be greater. Do Pats fans have the appetite for that? Would it be the case and that were to manifest?
Well, we have a few more moments. If you want to weigh in on that, feel free to join us, 617-779-7937. We're back to wrap things up after this.
This is WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
All right, just a couple more minutes before we get you into You Better You Bet countdown to kickoff. We'll wrap up with some of our picks for the trio of games in the NFL today, all of which you can hear right here on WEEI. But first, a thought on the Bruins. I am a hockey guy, so we have to go to Jay in North Carolina. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Good morning, folks. I hope you're having a good day there.
Same to you.
Before I talk about the Bruins, I just want to make one comment about the Patriots.
Yeah.
That Mike Vrabel was a coach of the Tennessee Titans and was very mediocre. Ben Johnson is a proven commodity, and on that I rest my case.
Okay.
Anyway, the Bruins have let the cat out of the bag. They couldn't beat the Islanders, but they could beat a top-notch team, and they've proven that they can do it. But I'm looking for a trade. I want to trade Cam Neely for a real general manager. They let Omar go for nothing, and he was a top-notch prospect. They should have gotten a top-notch centerman to feed Pastrnak. That's the element that's missing in the Bruins, because they got everything else and they've proven they can do it, even limping along and beating the Panthers, which I loathe the Panthers, but that's another story.
Right.
But anyways, that's the situation, guys.
Awesome. Jay, thank you for the call. Much appreciated. A lot going on with the Bruins in the last 48 hours. First of all, Brad Marchand turned around on Instagram, Fitzy, and posted a carousel post of photos of him and David Pastrnak, just happy as can be, two peas in a pod, to definitely not continue the overcompensation for what came from the Jones and Keith program on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, the only thing I can say about Rich Keefe's scoop on Friday.
Yeah.
Is why would he or his, the only question I would ask the audience when his source has been near impeccable for so long on so many different fronts, why would they make this up and how would they bring bad intel to the fore when it could potentially blow up on all parties involved?
Right.
I mean, you know, and in this particular case, Rich is the messenger. That he didn't create the story. He didn't bring it to, all he did was share something that he thought his audience would want to know. And I know there's been a lot of blowback in the direction of that show, the station, and Rich, whatever. The only thing I ask is for people to just sort of take a minute and think back on it. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. And the fact that he's kind of the middleman between what we hear and what the team is going through. And also, and I know we don't have a lot of time, so I won't go too far into this, but why am I supposed to sit here and not believe it? And I know I'm an EEI employee, so it just sounds like I'm towing the company line. But if I disagreed, I'd say so. You already got a coach fired. It's clear that there was infighting between the coach and the players. There's definitely a difference in compete level and full 60-minute efforts and just the intangibles that came with Bruins teams of past years when you had leaders like Chara and Bergeron and Krejci and, you know, guys that built championship caliber play and culture in that room. It looks like there's a difference in the way that they work through games. They work with each other. It does not look like a cohesive effort. It looks like a lot of spare parts that have been put together in no real set direction and a lot of mediocre play. So why am I not supposed to believe that players that are used to playing from the top are now maybe having a little bit of an issue with the fact that they're in the middle of the pack right now and seem like they're going to be there for a while? It adds up to me. I don't know if that's too pro EEI for everybody to hear, but the reports add up to me.
Just sharing some thoughts. And look, I would love nothing more. Just as a, forget about the media aspect, as a Boston sports fan.
Yeah.
And somebody who loves Bruins fans and has said on the public airwaves time and again, of the four major North American sports franchises in Boston, there may be no greater fan base than the Bruins fans. They are the best.
Yep.
Like those who bleed black and gold are the hailest, the hardiest, and the most fun to party with. And I hope we turn around and see that this was, you know, months from now, the moment when their season turned around as well. Because if you asked me yesterday, Dan, which of the four teams, Patriots need a head coach,
yep,
Red Sox need a right-handed hitter,
yep,
and to get back on track, and the Celtics need to get out of this weird little funk they found themselves in.
Right.
The team that needed a win most immediately was the Bruins, and they got one yesterday. Let's hope it's a turning point.
Well said, Nick Fitzy-Stevens. Quickly, rapid fire, Bills and Broncos at 1 o'clock. Bills are 8.5-point favorites. Do you have them covering that?
Tight early, Buffalo covers with a late surge.
Okay, I'm right there with you. Packers and the Eagles at 4:30. Eagles are 5.5-point favorites. Where do you stand?
I want it to go differently, but it's woe pack woe today in the city of no brotherly love. Eagles big.
All right, and last one, the fun one. First of all, we're hammering the over on this one at 50.5.
Hammering the over.
Tampa, 3-point favorites at home against the Commanders. Can they win that one?
I wouldn't know who to pick in this one. All I did know is that any DFS type of action I have today,
yeah,
involves Tampa Bay running back Bucky Irving, who may be, ooh, good for 200 in a tutty, Derrick Henry style, right out the gate.
Okay, book that in the OVER OVA. And that is where we stand on the trio of games, all of which you can hear here on EEI. Mr. Stevens, it was a pleasure to work with you over the last couple of hours. Great to be able to start off the Sunday with you. Enjoy the Sunday slate of football, my good friend.
You as well, my guy. Look forward to the next chance we get to rock the mic together.
All right, folks, that has been our time here on WEEI. Don't forget, You Better You Bet. Countdown to kickoff coming up next. John Lyons has you at noon up until 12:30 to get you ready for the slate of games in the NFL. Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy your Sunday. Goodbye.